So before proposing a change, we don't need to be making a change for the sake of change. It is, what is that change going to accomplish? Are we doing this change for the sake of change? Or what is it, whether it is learning outcomes, whether it is institutional effectiveness? And having these conversations with folks that are resentful to change.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast. I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I'm here with my co-host, Brad Garner. Welcome back, Brad.
Hi, Tiffany. Glad to be here.
Last week, we had the opportunity to talk to Baz Abul-Anain, and it was wonderful. So we are now back for part two. Let's welcome back our guest. Hi, Baz.
Hi, Tiffany. Hi, Brad.
Hi there.
If you didn't catch the first part, you can listen in and catch additional resources on our website, www.digitaltolearn.com.
So when you think about students coming to a campus, having their own collection of digital tools that they use in their daily lives, as they look at what we offer, do you think they're more attracted to innovation or ease of use?
I would say both, because you can be innovative, but it's not enticing to use, and it's cumbersome, and it is clunky. So as you innovate, you have to keep that balance between innovation and ease of use. Simplicity is the ultimate sophistication, like they say. So when we are trying to implement new technologies, we put ourselves in the shoes of the students. How is that interface going to look like in terms of students? Can you, and I have done that in the past, I would go and sit in an office with one of my staff and say, well, okay, we just are about to implement single sign-on, for example. I am a student, and I would like to see what that experience is going to look like. And you will be surprised by how many times we said, no, this product is not ready to be launched yet. Mm-hmm. And we told vendors, no, I don't think your product is ready for prime time yet because of some of the issues that surfaced while we were testing it. So I think it is important, as you are a technology executive or a technology professional trying to roll technical solutions out, to be cognizant of the fact that people look at technology as an automator, as an enabler. It is not a destination. And what I mean by that is that they don't really need to be spending a lot of time trying to learn new technologies when the primary function for them is to be learning the discipline that they enrolled in the school to master. And the same applies for faculty members. I've had many conversations with faculty members and saying, well, the technology in the classroom is cumbersome, and I don't want to be spending a lot of time learning different technologies, particularly when you have a bigger campus and the technology in the classroom is not matching. So you would have no standards between classrooms, and you as an instructor or a faculty member would have to learn multiple systems to be able to deliver instructions. I don't think it is fair for faculty. And I think as technologists, we have to be cognizant of that.
Mm-hmm. We have faculty who I think we would classify as being fairly innovative in their thinking, but who often share with us that they're frustrated questioning the longevity of a tool. So what's the point in, you know, every fall you're going to introduce all these new tools that are available to us in our online classroom or in our physical classroom? And then what, next year we're going to have a whole new set of tools? Like, they want to make sure we know these are really hard to learn. And if we're going to invest all this time and energy in getting it up and running, you know, is it even worth learning at all? So that's unfortunate. You know, I don't have an answer for it, but it's sad to hear that.
It is, but I think it is one of the downfalls for the innovation. And I don't know how other institutions do this change, but let's take learning management systems, for example. I have known institutions that are constantly changing learning management systems because, quite frankly, that they did not choose the right learning management system from the beginning. Mm-hmm. They either went with something that is open source, that is not supported, that's probably maintained by a few professionals outside that they work on it whenever they have time. I have went through learning management implementations throughout my career in higher education. And I have to tell you, it is crucially important to select stable technologies and stable companies and not be deceived by what is shining out there. And there's a lot of buzzword. And that's what I said when I said learn how to say no, because you will be enticed and you will be approached by many vendors and many faculty members and many students saying, I tried this app on my phone and it's really cool. And then when you look at it, you will find that there is a lot of weaknesses to that, whether it is support, whether it is privacy, whether it is risk to your digital assets as an institution. So you have to be really cognizant of that. And it does take a lot of research and a lot of insights. So yeah, I agree with you. It's one of the downfalls for innovations and rapid changes in higher education. And it is a lot of work. Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately for many faculty members, the learning management system they love the most is the one they're not using.
That's absolutely true. I agree with that, Brad. I have, but the key is, and this is where really the difference comes in. As an institution, I don't think decisions need to be made in a vacuum. Faculty members need to have a say on what learning management system the institution is using. Like, for example, when we were about to embark on a project to implement a new learning management system, we put together a team that had faculty members, had administrators, even student representation, and we invited vendors. So there was a cohesive conversation taking place. And then at the end, we made the decision that everybody agreed on. I think that is important so people feel that they were heard, that they are having a stake in it. And quite frankly, when I think about all the projects that we went through, I can tell you that statistically, the projects that were led by faculty members and non-IT folks were the most successful projects because they feel that they own it. Mm-hmm. It is not something IT is trying to push on them. It is not something that I don't want it, but they are making me. So it is important to keep that in mind and garnish that buy-in when you are considering new technology solutions.
That is a great piece of advice. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
We talked a little bit about the data analytics and the trend there and institutions needing to really invest time or energy or even people in interpreting the data and using it to make change. What other technology trends in or around higher ed have your attention?
I think artificial intelligence is becoming a hot topic now. A lot of institutions are looking at artificial intelligence. I personally have been paying attention to how to leverage artificial intelligence solutions to guard and protect our digital assets. I have come across a couple products that I had the pleasure of working with their vendors to monitor our network and raise red flags when there is some suspicious activities like ransomware or cyber attacks happening from within the United States or outside. I think artificial intelligence also enable adaptive learning. So instead of having, we all know that there are different learning methods, different learning trends between students. So having artificial intelligence analyze students' abilities to learn and providing them with the instruction in a way that is suitable to that method of learning is going to be a trend that many institutions need to consider. And then virtual reality, virtual environments, which is fascinating. I have seen many demos about virtual lab assessments and virtual exhibit halls and virtual museums. And so from the comfort of your home, you're actually able to visit all these environments without leaving or expensing for the travel. So these are, I believe, are trends that are going to be hot topics in higher education, or already are hot topics. And I know that many institutions are investing in that heavily right now.
So in the midst of all this innovation and change, we find ourselves working for institutions that don't change very easily. How do we balance those two things?
The only thing that is constant is change, Brad. So I don't think that we all can deny the fact that change is essential in academic institutions as well as in life in general.
True.
I don't believe that people hate the change. It is what takes to change. It is the effort and the work that needs to be done to make change. So if we can understand that and have these conversations with faculty members, with students, I think change can be possible. And that's the part that I believe many institutions and many professionals fail to do. because I can come in with my own personal agenda and I tried a product in one university and I think that this product is going to be working effectively in the new university or new college that I'm joining, or the examples are many. So before proposing a change, we don't need to be making a change for the sake of change. It is, what is that change going to accomplish? Are we doing this change for the sake of change? Or what is it, whether it is learning outcomes, whether it is institutional effectiveness, and having these conversations with folks that are resentful to change. I actually have had similar experiences when we were implementing an enterprise resource planning system, for example. That's a gigantic project. It's a multi-year project, multi-million dollar project. And it's going to impact many function area within an institution. So you have to have conversations with the business office. You have to have conversations with academics, with HR, as well as some of the accrediting body to make sure that you're in compliance and creating some of the reports and the data that they are looking for. So when we were about to embark on that project, a lot of people said, well, I've been doing this for many, many years, and now you're asking me to be making a change, and it's going to be a lot of work. And sadly, some of them opted to retire because they have been there for a long period of time, and they were eligible for retirement, and they made that choice. But for an academic institution to stay competitive and to provide students with the services that they are expected, change is inevitable. And you have to continue to look at what's out there in the market and how it's going to improve your students' experience and have these conversations so you're actually enticing folks to be part of the change rather than an obstacle for the change. And that's a technique that I believe has worked with me the number of years that I've been in higher education, and I would highly recommend it for anybody that would like for a change. And it is not only in higher education, like for example, at home. When I want my daughters to change something, we have conversation about why that change is important. It really is the why. It is not the how that change should happen. It's like, why are we talking about a change right now? For example, if we're looking about changing curriculum, well, that's something that not many faculty members like to change curriculum every now and then. But let's ask the question, are we still competitive in the marketplace? Are we exposing our students to current instruction based on new technologies or new trends? So when the answer is no, then the change is no brainer. You have to make that change. Otherwise, you're going to fall behind and students are going to go elsewhere to find something that is more current, more relevant to their work expectation in the future.
And you're right, it is a process, because if you're thinking about moving from point A to point B, you're going to have people say, I really like it at point A. Once they learn how to do point B, they look back and go, how did I ever live that way? So it's just a process.
Right. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
One fun thing on this podcast we've been doing for the past, I don't know, a few months is trying to gather predictions about the future of higher ed, mostly so we can say we told you so or we told you first when these predictions come true.
And then the other side of that, in fairness, if it doesn't come true, we'll say,
blame someone.
Do you believe what Baz said?
Yeah. But we were wondering if you had any predictions for the future of higher ed, and define future how you will, right? So 5 years from now or 10 years from now.
I think in the next 5 years, almost all institutions, and I hate to say all or never, but let's figuratively say that perhaps all institutions are going to seriously consider online education as not necessarily as an alternative, but as a vehicle to deliver instructions. I think with the onset of the pandemic, we were caught unprepared to deliver instructions. And many institutions have had several conversations with institutions that were not ready to deliver instructions simply because they did not have learning management systems. And those who did have learning management systems were not ready because they did not train their faculty members to actually effectively use learning management systems. So I think moving forward, and now that we are post-pandemic and everybody got vaccinated and we are moving on, I don't think that this experience is going to go without lessons learned from it with many institutions. So I'm starting to see some trends now that institutions that were opposed to online learning starting now to open up to that by exploring technology solutions, by sending their faculty members to training opportunities to be better prepared to deliver instructions in the online environment. So that's one trend that I think is going to be persistent. I don't think it is going to change. Again, data analytics. How can we be more proactive in saving at-risk students when it comes to academic performance? Academic institutions need to play a better role to improve the way that they reach out to students that are at risk of dropping out for many reasons. First of all, that student had made the investment and it is not fair for them to drop out halfway through the journey. So instead of waiting for the student to say, I'm struggling, I'm dropping out, I think there are tools now in place that can predict who is likely to complete a course versus those who cannot. And academic institutions need to find automation to actually reach out to these students soon before they reach the point where they give up. And that really is to help students and also improve the graduation rates. It is no secret that graduation rates now in academic institutions are struggling, and that would be one way to address that. So I think that's going to be a focus in the few years to come. And again, virtual reality, how can we show and deliver resources to students in a cost-effective, efficient manner? And these are technologies that now can do that.
Well, we're going to hold you accountable for that, Baz. And 5 years from today, we're going to be releasing a news release about your predictions.
Thank you, Brad, and I'd be happy to help in any way I can to make that happen.
It has been such a pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you, Brad. The pleasure is mine. Thank you for having me.
One of the things I haven't mentioned yet is in connecting with Baz over LinkedIn, I noticed that of all of his posts, most of them are kudos of him giving shout outs to his colleagues and people that make work happen, which was so inspiring. So we're thankful for the work that you do, but also just the attitude you have towards your work and to those around you. So
amen. Thank you, Tiffany. I appreciate that. They are the movers and shakers. I don't really do anything more than just facilitate, but the true heroes are my teams. So thank you. I appreciate you acknowledging that.
Yeah, you could really pick up on it. So as you move into your new role, we wish you the best, and this won't be the last time that you hear from Brad and me, so be warned.
Looking forward to it. Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.